Intelligent design and DNA. And scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune into Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart. You may have heard of David Coppedge, who worked on NASA's Cassini project, which was launched to study Saturn, and it's still successfully functioning today, many years later. Well, Coppedge worked on the Cassini mission at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in California for years until he was eventually fired after a controversy regarding his support for intelligent design. And that's the scientific theory that there's evidence of intelligence in the structure of the cosmos and in biological life, physics, in the universe itself. Well, what an honor to welcome David Coppedge to Real Science Radio. Thank you for joining us, David.
The pleasure is mine. Good to be with you, Bob.
Well, here's an outline of what I would love to talk about with you. Your time at JPL, a bit about the Cassini project itself, the mission to Saturn, the controversy, the lawsuit, and then maybe I think we all have time to even talk about some of your recent articles on your fabulous website, Creation Evolution Headlines, which is abbreviated CREV, Creation Evolution, CREV.info. So that's my outline. Is that all right with you?
Sounds like fun.
Okay, so, well, how about we start with the Cassini mission?
The Cassini mission is the largest and most sophisticated outer planet mission ever launched, and it's been a great success ever since it arrived at Saturn back in 2004, and I was able to work on this project since before launch in 1997.
Mm. What an honor it is. I'm sure it is for you to have worked on such an astounding accomplishment of mankind to study the solar system and this planet that has fascinated human beings since Galileo looked at it through a telescope and saw the rings. But then what an honor it is for me to talk to you and then our audience to hear your story. So, David, the project went on, the mission went on after it completed its mission. Then it went on to an extended mission, which was completed, and then a second extended mission. Is that all correct?
Yes, and I worked all the way into the second extended mission. So I was there for the whole thing up until the last couple of years.
Mm. And some of what the Cassini mission discovered, could you share just a little bit, a thumbnail sketch of the look at Saturn?
Well, when I was younger, I always was envious of the ones who got the first look at Mars or some other planet. And I would watch TV and watch these scientists jumping up and down. And I thought, wouldn't that be cool to work at a place like that? And then at age 45, I actually got to go and work there. So I was thrilled, and I was in some of those rooms where we were the first to see, like, the first views of Titan or Enceladus close up. And to me, one of the most fascinating discoveries was in 2005 when we found geysers on the little moon Enceladus.
Mm.
Which is only about as wide as the state of Arizona, a small moon. It should be frozen solid, but it's still active, and it even creates a ring around Saturn, the E ring.
So if we could explain that to the audience from the perspective of a biblical creationist, the Earth is young, the solar system, the universe, it's all young. And so you're making an argument similar to the one that's been made for one of the moons of Jupiter, the moon Io, which has a lot of heat coming off of Io. And so, as I know that this is part of your understanding, NASA identified that it had way more heat coming off of it than could be explained for something that's hundreds of millions or billions of years old. Even giving the planet Jupiter's gravitational tug on its moon, there's no way to explain all the heat.
Yes, that's actually one of the things that started me on my Creation Evolution Headlines news reporting was I heard a talk by the Cassini Project scientist in 1980 describing that there was 10 times more heat coming out of Io then could be accounted for by tidal flexing.
Oh,
and I thought, wow, people ought to know about that. So I started writing up things like that.
Well, thank you for doing that. Of course, when we have mentioned that over the last many years, atheists attribute it all to tidal pumping, that Jupiter is exerting this attractive force, and the way it pulls on its moon Io on the surface in the interior of the moon, it generates some friction, some heat. But you say it was the Cassini Project scientist. Do you recall his name? Is it okay to mention who that was?
Yes, it was Dr. Dennis Mattson.
Dr. Dennis Mattson. And so what they observed many years ago is that tidal pumping doesn't explain all the heat.
Yes, and I've read other sources to that effect that they can't explain it all. Plus, you have the problem of all these heavy lava elements like magnesium that should have sunk to the core long ago, but they're coming out of the crust. And the entire interior of Io should have recycled itself, I forget how many times, multiple times over billions of years, and yet it's still going.
And so similar to the Earth, if the Earth was once molten, then the gold, for example, that we find in the crust of the Earth should have sunk to the core. So there's tremendous evidence against the secular nebular hypothesis theory of the solar system formation. In fact, when you were at JPL, Jet Propulsion Laboratory, run by Caltech, had you met a scientist there named Mike Brown? Because he runs NASA's exoplanet database. Did you know Mike Brown? I'm just curious.
Well, he's one of the 5,000 or so I didn't know personally, but I actually did hear him talk about extrasolar planets in the auditorium one time.
Oh, wow, because we've discussed his statement that now that we have found so many exoplanets, we compare their properties to our theory of how a solar system originated. He said, we thought we understood the formation of planetary systems pretty deeply. It was a really beautiful theory and clearly thoroughly wrong. So, and that from NASA's exoplanet database manager, Mike Brown, astronomer. So it's pretty neat that biblical creationists, we make an inherent claim that all the secular claims of origins will be shown to be false. And one after one, they fall.
Yes, I actually have a 2-hour presentation on evidences of youth in the solar system, and many of them come from Saturn, from my experience working on the project. For instance, Saturn's rings are young, Titan's surface is young. I watched with great expectation when the Huygens probe landed on the surface of Titan, and they expected it to land with a splash in a global ocean, but it landed on soft sand that was just moist, but no global ocean at all that they had predicted based on billions of years.
Mm. In fact, the changes in the rings of Saturn, there are so many transient events in our solar system that are shocking to those who believe that the solar system is 4 billion years old. Because if it was that old, the chances that we would see things like in a blink of an eye, how could we be seeing all these things on all these different planets and moons and through the solar system itself? It's just all really exciting.
Yes, and I think Enceladus and Titan are real good examples of how things cannot be as old as they claim they are.
Hmm. So before we move on to the controversy and you sharing some of the fabulous intelligent design videos that we've sold for years here at Real Science Radio, like Unlocking the Mysteries of Life and Metamorphosis on Butterflies, and we just love flight, the genius of birds. We've had Paul Nelson on. I know he's a friend of yours. Just extraordinary videos. And there's a controversy that arose when you shared some of these with your coworkers. But before that, could you tell us a little bit about what you did at JPL? David, my background, I worked for McDonnell Douglas Helicopter Company, the Army's Apache helicopter in the simulation department. And I went on to work for Microsoft in Redmond as a liaison to IBM on their networking software. So we have a bit of a technical interest here in our audience. After all these many years, our Friday audience for Real Science Radio tends to be technical. Could you tell us a bit about what you actually did?
Yes, I did not work as a scientist. I want to make that clear. I was a computer team lead. I was responsible for most of the computers, the ground computers, for the Cassini mission. And that included stations that we had across the country and in Europe, which I would support remotely. And so I came onto the team initially, and then after a couple of years, the team lead left, and I was the natural one to rise up into his position. So I maintained my position of team lead computer system administrator for 9 years straight.
Oh, wow. And thank you for that part in this project. Of course, that's how we manage these space programs, is by terrestrially based computer systems. So thank you for what you did there. So, okay, could we go then to 2009? You had been for many years at JPL in California, and you began sharing Elestra videos. Is that right?
Well, yes, particularly Privileged Planet was one, and Unlocking the Mystery of Life was another.
Tremendous.
And I want to make it clear that I wasn't there on a mission to convert people. I was there to do a good job and to do the best I could.
Sure.
But just occasionally, you know, maybe once a month, twice a month or something, I would lend these DVDs to friends, co-workers that knew me and I knew them. So I was not going up to total strangers.
Right.
I would share these videos like on a Friday before leaving and say, hey, this is a great film. Would you be interested in borrowing it over the weekend?
Now, did you have a role in, I know that today you're involved with, you're a fact checker and you're involved with the work of Elestra Media. Did you at that time?
Yes, I've been on Elestra's board since its founding. And so I helped arrange the interviews that are in The Privileged Planet. In fact, there are four JPL scientists in that film. So I thought this is the perfect place to share this film because
it's right
on message with what JPL is about.
Right, exactly. And I think the audience would love to know that you and your family, you guys have played a very important role in the growth of the formation of the biblical creation movement. Your dad wrote one of the key books years ago on evolution, possible or impossible. He had a degree, even in those early days, it was basically in biochemistry, but he would show from the structure of a protein the impossibility, the absurdity of thinking that a typical protein could form by chance.
Yes, and like you, he was a pastor. He began as a pastor and took an interest in science, especially when he saw my high school biology textbook and how it was treating evolution as fact. So he went into deep study in that subject, got the equivalent, I think, of a PhD from UCLA in chemistry, and wrote that amazing book.
Yeah, and what a book. It made an impact on the men who would become the leaders of the creation science movement of today. Then you grew up basically alongside the creation movement. That's pretty exciting. What a thrill.
Yes, I took an interest in this subject early on because I saw how important it was as a teenager, and it's stayed with me ever since.
The scientists at JPL who were interviewed and appear in the Privileged Planet video, would you be able to indicate for us, do you think they would acknowledge evidence for design in the cosmos or no?
Well, only one of them is a professing Christian, Dr. Bijan Namati, a great man. They're all PhDs. And two of the others I know are not opposed to looking at the evidence for design, and they took part cheerfully. Another one was brought in, Dr. Charles Fleischman, and he's an evolutionist, but he's an honest evolutionist, and he admits that there's a lot of evidence of the habitability of Earth that makes us look pretty special.
An honest evolutionist. So that would be someone who would say, I believe in evolution, but if there's evidence against evolution or for creation, I'm willing to consider it. So that's pretty neat.
Yeah, perhaps. I don't know in his case, but at least he was willing to talk about the surprising evidences for design in the solar system.
Yeah. Okay. Really neat. So you had been sharing these videos that you had a hand in producing. And by the way, the audience should remember us talking about the awesome quality of these videos. They're like Nova Productions on PBS, the animations, the just every aspect of the production is first class. I need to let you know, the first time we heard about unlocking the mystery of life, one of our listeners called in from Colorado Springs and said they saw a documentary on their local public television station, and it was against evolution. It provided evidence that there was an intelligent designer. And I said to our caller, I said, well, I appreciate your call, but you must be confused, because there's no way a PBS affiliate would air such a video. And she insisted, David, that she got it right, and I needed to look into this unlocking the mystery of life. And we very quickly began selling that DVD, and we have ever since.
You know, Dr. John Morris, when he first saw it, he said he stood up and shouted, glory.
Yeah. Yes, I believe that. In fact, I was just at ICR, spent the day there, and had lunch with John Morris, my son, who's a hockey player. We had a tournament in Dallas. What a great time that was. Okay, so you began sharing these videos, and there was an outcry against you? I don't think that's the case, right?
No, there was one female coworker who, behind my back, went to my boss and said that she felt harassed by what she considered to be religious material, even though she could never identify in the trial what this religious material was. But I had given her Unlocking the Mystery of Life, and she fast-forwarded through it, and I found the thing on my chair at the next workday. And so I thought, well, maybe she's not interested. I won't bring it up anymore.
Yeah.
She went to my boss and claimed that she felt harassed, even though she had accepted this video willingly and said it looks interesting.
Sure. And it had interviews with four of the scientists at the facility that she worked at, and there is no reference to God. There are scientists who are atheists who are part of the intelligent design movement, which is a bit bewildering to me, but they exist. And so I wish that the intelligent design movement, certainly the leaders, I wish that they would identify the designer as Jesus Christ, God the Son, the creator of the world, but they don't. They stop short of identifying the designer. And so they have a scientific theory that we should be able to detect design. So when she said that you harassed her regarding religion, she's exaggerating.
Oh, yeah. I mean, what she experienced by watching this DVD was so far away from JPL's own definition of what harassment is. I mean, we usually think of sexual harassment or racial harassment, not evidence for design in nature. So it was quite surprising, but my boss came down hard on me that afternoon, yelling at me to stop pushing religion.
Wow.
And he shouted twice, intelligent design is religion. Of course, this is a man who grew up in a Christian church, but when he went to college, learned about evolution and jettisoned his faith.
And rejected Jesus Christ. We call these folks the beautiful people. They don't affirm the biblical values and morality as appear in the Ten Commandments, but they replace those with their values of diversity, free speech, and tolerance. And we've noticed over 24 years on the air, David, that the most intolerant people that we can identify are the ones who claim that they promote free speech, tolerance, and diversity.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a diversity department at JPL, but you would not believe the anger that is generated by some people when they're criticized about Darwinism, or when Darwin is criticized in any way.
So about
that was the case here.
Yes, right. And we have seen it. So unfortunately, I guess we would believe it. So about a month later, you were demoted. You were team lead of the system administrators, if I understand that correctly. And obviously, because of this incident, you were then unceremoniously demoted from that position.
Yes, it's kind of a long story, but that's basically what happened. In a month, the Human Resources Department had been contacted by my boss, and they interviewed me and several others and decided that I was guilty of harassment.
Mm.
And so they issued me a written warning, which was like putting me on the end of the gangplank, basically. And one more false move and I'm out. So I was under a cloud, under a sword of Damocles, and I tried to reverse this by going through internal channels, but I finally call the Alliance Defending Freedom asking for their advice.
Yeah, we've worked with them over the years. They've defended some of our group, our team here in Denver, on various projects. And we participate with their Pulpit Freedom Sunday once a year. So we're very familiar with ADF, and we're thankful that they supported you in this and represented you. Now, is it possible, sort of like the Apostle Paul, remember when he appealed to Caesar, and it didn't go especially well for him? He's with the Lord, so, and he said to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord, but he was arrested, and as best we can tell, in the mid-60s of the first century, he was beheaded in Rome. Is it possible that if you had not sued, you could have remained there through the rest of your career?
Well, I certainly planned to until 2017. I would still be there making good money if this had not happened. But given what happened, and I could have been laid off anyway and never known the motivations that were behind it.
So
by going through this lawsuit, we learned a lot that was going on behind the scenes that I never would have known.
With the subpoena power, and as I've looked through the documents, it's real clear that the supervisors, the administration at JPL, did not want the actual account of what had transpired to come out, and they did everything they could to resist and to present a revisionist history.
Yes, it's always the whistleblower's fault, you know, and so they did all they could to destroy my reputation and character, and they could call on any witnesses and train them and give them time off work, but we couldn't do that. We couldn't call on witnesses that were working there, and even if we could, they probably wouldn't want to testify against the lab for their own job's sake.
Right, exactly. So the judge in 2013 ruled against you on all 10 counts of the case, and a dear friend of Real Science Radio, Dr. Jerry Berkman, who's been here in studio, had multiple interviews with Jerry. He is going to document your case in the third volume, an upcoming volume of his amazing work, The Slaughter of the Dissidents. So,
I guess I'll be notorious in that regard as one of the expelled.
expelled. In fact, Ben Stein's feature film, Expelled, No Intelligence Allowed. What a great film that was. And, we worked in Colorado. That was supposed to air on just one or two screens. And we planned a movie marathon and succeeded in getting it onto about maybe 8 or 10 screens in Colorado. So we try to do our part, David Coppedge, to get the word out that there is a persecution of scientists and others from our government, our culture, at our universities for those who question atheistic origin.
Yeah, that's right. And I want to stress again that this was very low-key and under the radar. I didn't walk around the lab with a target on my back. You know?
Right.
I was just trying to be very low-key with individuals. But what I didn't plan on was the gossip. Apparently, this got all the way up to the Cassini program manager. He said from general hallway conversation, he knew I was passing out these DVDs, and he thought it was pushing religion. And so he, along with my office manager and others, testified against me that that they thought intelligent design is religious activity.
Right, exactly. And the opponents in the scientific world at large, the opponents of ID cannot mention it without calling it creationism and religion. And that's, for the most part, they don't want to take on its scientific arguments, so they try to dismiss it out of hand.
Absolutely. And I can't tell you how many times I went to the auditorium and listened to lectures about the origin of life and Darwinian evolution, and that had total free rein to speculate wildly on such things.
Oh, yeah. Just like at a high school or even an elementary school in the U.S. at a public school, if the teacher is a homosexual, they can go on and on about their lifestyle and promote that worldview. But if the teacher is a Christian who believes that God made us male and female and marriage is between a man and a woman, they better keep their mouth shut if they want to keep their job. So that's the world we live in. We realize that. So,
yeah, these are hard times, but also exciting times, because it opens up wonderful opportunities to testify for Christ and be willing to suffer for it.
Yes, in fact, I think your case, what you went through, including then the terrible bout you fought with cancer, David, you were courageous and heroic through this entire episode of your life, but I think you guys brought tremendous attention to the anti-evolution camp of scientists that are struggling to get the word out. The ID movement got a lot of publicity, a lot of attention because of your case.
Well, I hope so. All I wanted to do is ring the Liberty Bell a little bit, you know, for people like me who just want to share scientific evidence for design. Mm. And I want to say also that at JPL, there's a lot of good Christian people, and some of them in high places, but very few of them actually share what they believe to others. And I was one of the few that attempted it, and look what happened.
Right, exactly. So that's why they're intimidated to keep their mouth shut. And you were the object lesson to them. So the two last topics, the videos we've already discussed from Illustra Media. If anyone in the audience would like to watch these videos, we encourage you to come to our website, rsr.org, or realscienceradio.com, and click on our store, go to the science department, and you'll find Flight, The Genius of Birds, Metamorphosis on Butterflies. What a great video that is. They're all great. Unlocking the Mystery of Life, The Privileged Planet, Darwin's Dilemma. We sell all of those videos. And so the last thing, David Coppedge, could we talk about your website, crev.info, C-R-E-V, Creation Evolution Headlines. So it's crev.info. And just if you could give us a thumbnail sketch of three of your recent articles. One is so fun that antibiotic resistance has surprised evolutionists when they found it in a tribe in South America that has had almost no contact with the modern world.
Yes, antibiotic resistance has long been a proof of evolution. I've heard it in debates with Duane Gish and Henry Morris about it. Evolution is as factual as the bacteria that evolve resistance to antibiotics. Isn't that an amazing proof of evolution? Well, here they're finding that these resistance genes are in a remote tribe that had no contact, no direct contact with Western food or other lifestyle, and yet the genes were theirs. It underscores the idea that creationists have been saying that the genes were already there, but they come to the surface under certain conditions.
Mm. And so Ann Gibbons, a science reporter we've often quoted here at Real Science Radio for Science Magazine, she just lays it right out that this is a problem for evolution because it predicted that with our modern antibiotics, that these genes that evolutionists have claimed evolved rapidly as a response to antibiotics, that they're found in this remote region, in this tribe in Venezuela, and they're there in their gut biota. They're there. They're already part of their existence. And so that's the challenge.
Yes, Ann Gibbons says it's troubling because it suggests that antibiotic resistance is ancient, diverse, and astonishingly widespread in nature.
And because when God created us as a contingency for the fall, Adam and Eve rebelling against him, and the earth, instead of being a paradise, would become a hostile place to live, he gave us an immune system, and he gave us an ability to survive, and he did that for all organisms, not just for human beings. And so as creationists and even ID proponents, we're not surprised to find designed into organisms mechanisms for survival.
Yes, and it could be misleading to label things as good and evil in microbes and disease because there's a lot of pushes and pulls in the balance of nature. And when things get out of balance or in the wrong place, or when God lets off some of the regulation, perhaps that's what causes some of the problems.
Hmm. Maybe two last topics from your recent articles at crev.info. A convergent evolution in the ocean. I just love this topic. And you have a great one about four-limbed creatures that evolutionists have to claim just happen to evolve in the same direction from land to water over and over and over again independently.
Yes, they wave this magic wand of convergent evolution. Getting the evolution of any complex system is improbable enough, but multiply it multiple times, and they just do hand-waving exercises about that. We're going to be talking about this very subject in our next Illustra film, which is coming out in June. It's called Living Waters, We're going to have some really good animations of dolphin echolocation and other amazing things and sea creatures. So this is right on topic, and I talk about it in this article. But, yeah, convergent evolution, we'll be talking directly to that Darwinian argument in the film.
And your article is about penguins, mosasaurs, sea lions, sea turtles, and whales. You mentioned echolocation in dolphins. We love the example of comparing echolocation in the seas with echolocation in bats. Molecular biologists have found virtually identical programming in the proteins that enable that astounding feature.
Yes, it's as if God wanted to clearly disprove convergent evolution or evolution by blind processes. I mean, how better to do it than to show the same systems in unrelated animals?
And not only the same system, like an outward anatomy, but even down to the molecular programming to be virtually identical in organisms as diverse as bats and dolphins, where the evolutionists acknowledge that these creatures did not have a common ancestor that had echolocation.
So, yes, I know. It's really astonishing. And they also tend to think that, well, the environment selects the traits. But I can tell you, if you put a mouse underwater, it's not going to sprout flippers. You know, there's nothing about the sea that's going to cause innovations, which is their favorite word about how things arise as if by magic. It's that the creator designed these creatures for the same habitats.
Yeah, and in fact, there's a scientist at ICR that has written a series of articles on the term natural selection. And he points out that generally the secular world gives credit to sometimes even an inanimate environment for the ability that God has put into the organism. So if you have a cave, an underwater cave, it's not the cave that's making the fish more efficient. It's the organism being able to survive in different environments. Anyway, interesting topic.
Yeah, that's right. That's Randy Galuza, and he's got some really thought-provoking articles on that.
Yeah, he does. What a neat guy. And then finally, last topic, I promise, you have an article on how rocks can look older than they are. Can we talk about that as we close?
Yeah, this is another interesting article, I think, and it's just one of the daily fare that I have on creation evolution headlines, where I go to the scientific journals and report what they're saying themselves, not just secondhand material. Mm-hmm. But here's about zircons, which is the most widely used dating method.
As geochronometers.
Geochronometers. And they found a flaw because they assumed that there was no primordial lead inside the crystal. And yet they're finding that you can have globules of metallic lead inside these zircons, which can perturb the ages, they say, and be misleading and cause doubts about the reliability of the zircon ages.
Mm. And so we add this to, you know, zircon crystals turn out to be a fabulous gift to biblical creationists, with the prediction by the young Earth scientist of the helium diffusion rate and how helium, like it escapes from a birthday balloon, because the helium atom is so tiny, it gets out of everything. And so if zircon crystals were really billions of years old as claimed, then all their helium would have escaped by now. And lo and behold, zircons have plenty of helium in them, indicating that they're young.
Yes, Dr. Humphreys has written extensively on that in the RATE project. And yet here, the secular scientists are saying that the true ages of rocks might be distorted through Earth's history by this fact that there's primordial lead inside the crystals.
Just fabulous. And last observation I'll make, David Coppedge, is we have an article on carbon-14 and dinosaur bones. And in there, we give a list of all the places that carbon-14 has been found, including in diamonds, and we have a link to a secular paper that says we took diamonds, including one we cut up into six slices, and every slice has about the exact amount of carbon-14, and they're expecting to find none, and there's plenty of carbon-14, even in diamonds, which are claimed to be billions of years old, and carbon-14 its short half-life, there should be absolutely none after hundreds of thousands of years, let alone billions of years.
Well, I'm so glad you're getting this material out there in the radio and on your website. You're a rare pastor to take on these things, and I think you're a model for other pastors.
Well, thank you very much, David. What an honor to speak with you. It's been a lot of fun, and we're going to do what we can to promote this interview. We'll ask our audience to share it, to send links to their friends. So thank you so much for joining us here at Real Science Radio.
Thank you. God bless you.
God bless you. So that was David Coppedge and his website. You owe it to yourself to visit it on a regular basis because of the fabulous creation evolution headlines he has there at crev.info, crev.info. And our website, realscienceradio.com, or the abbreviation, rsr.org. This is Bob Enyart for Fred Williams, saying may God bless you.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real. That's what I'm talking about.